Welcome to Kevin JJ's Movie Mania Podcast, where Kevin and JJ discuss everything and anything they can about the movies they love and sometimes about the movies they hate. This is episode 2 and our first attempt at our on-the-spot top 5 list. JJ is going to kick things off by choosing our first list. So sit back and enjoy as you listen to our thoroughly animated discussion. Hi, everyone, and welcome to our first on-the-spot top five list. In this segment, it's set up that one of us will pick a top five subject, and we'll have some time to think about it and research it, and the other person, it's sprung on them, so they have to pick their top five pretty much off the cuff. And to start things off, we're going to go with JJ's top five subject. So JJ has had time to think about this and put his thoughts together, and I'm just going to be hearing about it now. So here we go.
Okay, so my first off the top five subject matter that I would like to discuss would be our top five Disney animated villains.
Okay. Wow, I can do that off the cuff.
Sound good?
I can definitely do that off the cuff.
Okay. So if I were to start with my number five, I would start it off with the Queen of Hearts from Alice in Wonderland.
My roses red. Who's been painting my roses red? Who dares to paint with vulgar paint the royal flower bed? Or painting my roses red? Someone will lose his head.
Okay.
And my very basic reasoning would be that not only is she pretty hideous, and not only does she use flamingos for her croquet, but how can you not have her on a top five list when she basically just wants to cut off people's heads in a Disney animated movie?
Yeah, it is a very dark subject matter for something Disney.
Well, and, you know, Alice in Wonderland, you know, straight from Lewis Carroll, you know, that source material was always going to be strange and dark anyway.
Of course.
And, you know, this movie came out in 1951. And alarming how dark and strange they allowed it to be, even as an animated movie back then.
Right.
And, she freaked me out when I was a kid watching Alice in Wonderland. I mean, I was in awe of her. You know, I loved to draw when I was a kid. I must have drew her like a million times. By the way, if you just hear the bird in the background chirping, I have a bird here, so sorry.
That's okay. It gives personality.
Right. So, yeah, and you know what? She even had, like, a very, like, male-looking face, like a male head. You recall?
Yeah, she looks like almost like Dom DeLuise. You know, with the round face and the dark hair. She's very masculine-looking, and I think that adds to her, you know, intensity a little bit.
Definitely, and, yeah, like the bulbous nose and the... You know, she had, like, the severe black hair pulled back in, like, a bun and, you know, just perfect for a Disney villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, just the fact that she just is willing to knock off anyone's heads for any reason whatsoever, off the cuff, if someone annoys her, if someone irks her, whether it's the most minuscule of issues or something huge and alarming, off of their head. So... to me, that's pretty horrifying and warrants a slot on my top five.
That works. I already wrote my top five. I thought of it pretty quickly.
All right.
My number five, I'm going to say the Evil Queen from Snow White.
All alone, my pet?
Why, yes, I am, but...
The little men are not here?
No, they're not,
Make it pies.
Yes, gooseberry pies.
It's apple pies that make the men folks' mouths water. Pies made from apples, like me.
Okay.
I just think, I mean, it's the earliest of villains.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the dual nature between, you know, the regal queen and her like purple dress and the black cape and and then the old woman with the apple and things like that. It's just it's so iconic and so archetypical, you know. It's
yeah.
just what you would think the evil queen would look like and has looked like throughout cinema, like all time. Even
yeah.
in other Disney movies, it's pretty much all modeled after her.
That you're right. I mean, that's what's so unique about it. I think the movie came out in 1937.
37.
You're totally right. The way she looked with those high arching eyebrows and that kind of like black headpiece with the crown on it and
yep.
and just the old hag that she turns into. You're right. I mean, I'm sure there's been many, many illustrations done over the centuries, but that's what we have to model after, is that, you know, those visions of her as both the queen and the hag, and you're right, it's totally iconic.
Right, and I kind of dig that her whole motivation is pretty much jealousy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, you know, in modern cinema, a lot of villains, you know, they have sections that are, you know, parts of their nature that are sympathetic, and so they're a little bit more, you know, fleshed out. But she's just like, wait, someone else is prettier than me? She must be destroyed. And that, I mean, it's very, like, primal almost. So I really like her as a villain.
Yeah, and I think it's a great choice. I'm not going to say if it's also on my top five.
Mm-hmm.
She definitely was, you know, kicking around in my head. I do think that this could be foreshadowing of like a heavily tipped female, you know, top five here. I get that feeling. But I guess
I have one more female, but my other ones are male.
Ah, then we're going to have a very different list.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good thing. And my number four would be Ursula, the sea witch from The Little Mermaid.
All right, before you continue, that's also my four, so we might as well just talk about it at the same time.
I admit that in the past I've been a nasty. They weren't kidding when they called me, well, a witch. But you'll find that nowadays I've mended all my ways, repented, seen the light, and made a switch. True, yes. And I fortunately know a little magic. It's a talent that I always have possessed. And here lately, please don't laugh, I use it on behalf of the miserable, lonely, and depressed. Pathetic. Poor unfortunate souls in pain, in need. This one longing to be thinner, that one wants to get the girl, and do I help them? Yes, indeed. Those poor unfortunate souls, so sad, so true. They come flocking to my cauldron, crying, spells, Ursula, please, and I help them. Yes, I do.
Awesome. That's great. She made my top five basically because a lot of villains in general, but of course for Disney animated movies, a lot of them, for as horrifying as they may be, there also has to be like a slight tinge of maybe like comedy about them or humor.
Well, absolutely. She's a very unusual villain in that she seems to be laughing and cackling the whole time.
Right, which is, you know, funny, but yet also off-putting and alarming.
Of course.
She's very comical, like you said, in the way she laughs and in the way she looks. I mean, that was a great invention on Disney's part to draw her as they did.
And she looks different from, I mean, most villains have the same kind of thin, sharp look to them.
Very true.
Almost across most of the, you know, Disney pantheon, but she's very different, that she's so bulbous and, well, I mean, you know, your number five is also in the same vein as her, but they're very unusual.
Yeah, but I know what you mean as far as, like, the more, like, pointed-looking figures. You know, some of my villains to come in this list are more pointed and less bulbous, but no, I definitely know your point. Yeah, I just think that, you know, she has this completely self-serving agenda, and, you know, the fact that she just wants to steal this beautiful, innocent girl's voice just basically because, you know, she's an old, fat, voiceless hag. I mean,
right, exactly.
You know, it's awful. It's
and she has a very good villain song. You know, you always need a good villain song in
always.
Their movies.
Definitely.
And that, you know, now that I say that, like my other one of my other picks has a very good villain song too. So,
oh yeah, good. Yeah, she sprang to mind immediately. I knew she was going to be somewhere in my top five, so, you know, that shows, you know, the strength of her villainry.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I haven't seen Little Mermaid too many times in my life, maybe somewhere 10-ish, 15 times, because, you know, I grew up with my cousin Amy. I was 6 when she was born. She watched Little Mermaid a lot.
Right.
So that's when I would mostly watch it with her, and I was fascinated by Ursula. It's a great name, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Great name. Very memorable name, for whatever reason. So
yeah, for some reason that just kind of fits with the octopus kind of...
Yeah, just kind of
kind of idea. It just... She looks like Ursula.
She does. She looks like an Ursula. Definitely. So, that would be my 4, and that's your 4.
And it's my 4, so you might as well just go ahead on to 3.
Okay. My number 3, it's kind of offbeat.
Okay.
I actually would pick Lady Tremaine from Cinderella.
These beads, they give it just the right touch. Don't you think so, Drizella?
No, I don't. I think she's... Oh, why, you little thief! They're my beads! Give them here!
Oh, no!
Oh, and look, that's my sash wearing my sash.
She can't! You
little...
Girls, girls. That's quite enough. Hurry along now, both of you. I won't have you upsetting yourself. Good night.
Okay.
The, AKA the Wicked Stepmother.
Right.
Basically, she's one of the pointed figures I was just talking about. Very, very pointy. Her whole look, she's very slender. You know, she's got this long chin, this long nose, this long kind of elongated hairdo that comes up to the sky, you know?
Right. I mean, she's just so sharp.
She's sharp. She's sharp.
And very B. Arthur looking.
Very B. Arthur. Very good. Very good. You know what? She may not have any superpowers per se, like some of the other ones that may pop up on our list, but because she doesn't have the superpowers and because she's so evil and super mean, I mean, the fact that she makes her stepdaughter slave away while her other two ugly daughters just kind of prance around.
Right.
You know, number one, that's awful in and of itself. And it's not just like literal slavery work within her own house, but it's also like psychological abuse. It's twofold.
Right. I mean, the sheer fact that she's always like put together so perfectly with her hair and her dresses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And her stepdaughter is meant to live in like rags in the attic.
And you know, she totally must know that Cinderella is, you know, a beauty. and that she's a hag with two ugly duckling daughters. So that, right. that gives her even all the more reason to just, right, she Cinderella's dirty, her hair is unkempt, sleeps with the mice, you know, and she's all the more happier for it.
Yeah.
So, again, I think I basically put her on my list because she didn't have any superpowers. She was just plain old mean. And that pointed look that is so, you know, iconic, as you mentioned before, it just popped out in my head.
Right.
So that's why she would be number three for
me. Very good. All right. Well, my number three is Scar from The Lion King.
Your powers of retention are as wet as a warthog's backside. But thick as you are, pay attention. My words are a matter of pride. It's clear from your vacant expression, the lights are not all on upstairs. But we are talking kings and successions. Even you can't be caught unaware. So prepare for the chance of a lifetime. Be prepared for sensational news. A shiny new era is tiptoeing nearer.
And where do we feature?
Just listen to teacher. I know it sounds sordid, but you'll be rewarded when at last I am given my dues. And injustice deliciously square.
I'll just say it right off the bat. The absolute success of Scar being a good villain is Jeremy Irons' voice.
Oh, totally.
I mean, it is so perfect in tone of sarcasm. It, like, you know, when he's mad, he, like, seeds anger
yes.
in a way that very few people can pull off.
Oh, yeah.
And then just the, you know, you always hear that comparison of the Lion King to Hamlet. And
yeah, very Shakespearean.
Right. And he's playing that Claudius part, you know, moving in, sleeping with Hamlet's mother.
Yep.
And it just, you know, that usurping of power and complete disregard of the pride, the casting out of actually, it's even worse than casting out. It's like convincing Simba that he had done wrong and making him run away, so I guess Scar doesn't have to feel guilty about it or something like that.
Oh yeah, he completely manipulates him.
Yeah, perfect word. He manipulates everything around him. I mean, you want to go back to Shakespearean, he's actually more of an Iago than he is a Claudius.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I mean, I listening to Jeremy Irons' voice, and like I just mentioned before with the villain song, his Be Prepared song, you know, it has a feeling of like a Nazi rally in it.
Ooh.
And it's so intense and, you know, so beautifully animated.
I never thought about that before.
Yeah, just, I mean, Scar is just, and he's not strong, he's not a fierce lion like
Mufasa.
Oh, sure,
he's nothing like Mufasa.
He's just a manipulator.
Yeah.
And he gets pretty far in just that, you know, that character aspect.
Yeah. I feel like I have free rein to kind of speak now.
Sure.
Because he's your number three, he's my number two.
Okay.
So, yeah, I just echo everything you said. You know, that he banishes Simba, and basically, once he gains control of Pride Rock, it all goes downhill anyway. Like, the land is destroyed.
Right.
He ruins everything.
Yep.
Kills his brother, murders in the stampede, awful, banishes his nephew, and then destroys the land. Can you get worse?
Yeah, because, you know, when you have a bunch of hyenas as your henchmen,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're scavengers. They don't,
yep.
you know, they don't keep the landscape up.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great choice for number three. My number two. I mean, he almost made my number one, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of getting interchangeable now at the top. And you know, going back to the look, Mufasa was, you know, big and strong and golden, and he was very dark and slender and
almost
pointed.
Almost malnourished looking.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, all these reasons that we've both mentioned is why he definitely warrants a position on this list.
All right, so I guess I'll move on to my number two. So this one kind of lets my geek flag fly, and it's definitely new. It's probably newer than anything else on our lists.
Hmm.
My number two is Syndrome from The Incredibles.
You, sir, truly are Mr. Incredible. You know, I was right to idolize you. I always knew you were tough, but tricking the probe by hiding under the bones of another super? Oh, man! I'm still geeking out about it. And then you had to just go and ruin the ride. I mean, Mr. Incredible calling for help? Help me, help me. Lame, 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 lame!
Oh, okay.
Very
interesting.
I just love how Jason Lee voiced him. The choice of Jason Lee, because, you know, in all the Kevin Smith movies, he's so, you know, comic book oriented and stuff like that. It's just mm-hmm. the voice seemed to work. And it's a voice that works for both the child version of Syndrome and the adult version.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole, you know, idea of this little kid that wants to be a superhero was slighted by, you know, the superheroes, and then grew up with this, you know, neurotic obsession with becoming super and using his brain to do so. He's pretty much an evil Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't really have any powers other than he's brilliant, and I just love the humor and the misguided, you know, approach that he has. And I mean, you know, for a movie like The Incredibles, if they don't have a formidable villain, you know, a lot of other movies could probably hold up even if the villain was subpar, and have done that before. But
yes, many times.
Right. But The Incredibles seems like it hinges on that, and I think, you know, Syndrome is a really strong character in an otherwise, you know, perfect Pixar superhero movie.
Okay.
Well, what do you think of Syndrome?
Well, okay, well, I'm going to take your word that he's an amazing villain. Unfortunately for me, I remember seeing The Incredibles 10 years ago, and I remember thinking it was pretty incredible, but I've only seen it once. And I honestly don't remember, you know, Syndrome all that well, so I'll just kind of take your word on it for that one.
Well, the strange thing about The Incredibles is that among the Pixar pantheon, it's almost forgotten. Maybe not as much as...
And you're right.
Maybe not as much
as
A Bug's Life.
And it's funny you say that because, yeah, I get angry when I read that people forget about The Incredibles.
Right.
And here I am being a hypocrite because I've only seen it once. But I do remember in my mind 10 years ago thinking so strongly about it as I was watching it. I thought it was so cool. It's just one of those weird instances where I just have not seen it for one reason or another again since. And I revere it in my mind.
Right.
And nothing specific about it is jumping out at me right now.
Well, once again, these lists are favorite lists, not necessarily what we think are literally best.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more subjective. So if, you know, you've only seen something once and it didn't make that much of an impact on you, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with The Incredibles because it's basically the Fantastic Four. So it's
much better than Fantastic.
You know, it has that, you know, real comic book, you know, approach to it. So that's why I kept going
that's
back to
it. That's why I lean towards.
Yeah,
sure. And like you said, these are off the cuff lists. So
exactly,
we got to be ready for anything that's thrown at us. So Good times.
All right, go ahead.
All right, well, my number one is going to seem, I don't know, to me, it seems like it's not very unique or original. I think it's one that a lot of people might say, which doesn't make it unique, but notwithstanding the recent movie that came out about this character, but I'm going to say Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty.
You're not offended, Your Excellency?
Why, no, Your Majesty. And to show I bear no ill will, I too shall bestow a gift on the child. Listen well, all of you. The princess shall indeed grow in grace and beauty, beloved by all who know her. But before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she shall prick her finger on the spindle of a spinning wheel and die.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Again, there was this revisionist take on the character in the recent, you know, hit movie that came out a few months ago, Maleficent, starring Angelina Jolie, in which, you know, the character is given multiple reasons why she acts how she acts. And, you know, in a certain way, that kind of really deadens the effect of what I think is one of, like, the great Disney animated villains of all time. But going back to that 1959 classic, I see her as the number one villain because, number one, as we've been saying throughout this whole thing, she's got the ultimate pointed look.
Oh, yeah.
And she is long. She is slender. She has this black cape with a huge train that follows behind her. She's got these black horns. She's got green skin, which almost makes her look like corpse-like.
Right.
And she kind of glides around with this huge staff and the black raven on her shoulder. And you know, just being a 3-year-old or 4-year-old or 5-year-old kid watching that, I remember being just absolutely fascinated and like horrified at the same time. And then once you go beyond just how she looks, I mean, she basically just wants to kill a baby.
Yeah.
You know.
She's a very, very dark, depressing presence.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she wants to kill the baby, and all because she wasn't invited to a boring-ass christening. I mean, when you break it down, that's the reasoning behind her wanting to kill this baby, which is just ludicrous and ridiculous, and I don't think you can get more evil than that. And the fact that she, you know, turns into this enormous fire-breathing dragon at the end, too. It's hard to think of another kind of just ominous villain than that, to me.
Right, and so. And visually, she is kind of an evolution past the Snow White Queen, but in a much, like I said, darker and even like demonic looking presence, you know, with the horns on her head and like that. It's just, it seems so extreme, you know, the other villains we were talking about.
No ambiguity. There's no ambiguity to her whatsoever.
Right.
She is just 100% evil. There is no reasoning to it, just whatsoever. Just bang on, that's our villain, and deal with me, basically. And, you know, it just affected me a lot as a kid, and that's why I loved it. And that would be my number one.
Perfect.
All right,
so my number one is a little different than that. But my favorite and my number one is going to be Jafar from Aladdin.
So Abdi turns out to be merely a ladder. Just calm, need I go on, take it from me. His personality flaws give me adequate cause to send him packing on a one-way trip, so his prospects take a terminal dip. His assets froze on the venue chosen is the ends of the earth. Shalom! Ex-Prince Ali!
think it has to be mostly because of the dry, dry humor that comes with him. And the one moment I always think of that epitomizes it is when the Sultan introduces Prince, you know, quote unquote Prince Ali to him. And the Sultan says something like, "We're all very happy to meet you." And then Jafar, just so deadpan, goes, "Ecstatic." And that, you know, because, and there's so many levels to Jafar, you know, like when he plays the old man to fool Aladdin into going to the Cave of Wonders, the hypnotism that comes out of his snake staff, the yearning after Jasmine, and it just, there's all these different levels. It's not, you know, he wants the treasure, he wants the sultanship, he wants the daughter. It's not just one single goal, like not one single evil goal that he has. And Aladdin is so spirited and so witty and so funny.
Yeah.
That
it's a good,
the way they wrote Jafar to kind of fit into that is like pitch perfect, because, you know, you were talking about Maleficent. If the villain in Aladdin was as dark and brooding and 100% villainous and serious as Maleficent is, it completely would have thrown off the balance of Aladdin, like the whole movie.
Right.
And obviously a lot of it is the banter between him and Iago, and but like that deep voice that he has, once again, the thin, angular look of him. It's just the ongoing theme with these people. I always go back to Jafar and the climax when Jafar is getting his wishes. It just, you know, the stakes just keep getting bigger and bigger, and he keeps getting more megalomaniacal.
Yeah.
Let's say that again.
Megalomaniacal.
There you go. I'm not even going to try, but you knew what I was trying to say.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah, it just, he, you know, he does become, you know, magically, but he does become murderous and spiteful and things like that. And it just, you know, he starts off by this, you know, as this little conniver, and then he becomes like a crazy, power-hungry maniac. And it's, that's definitely pretty much my favorite.
He definitely has an arc.
Yeah.
You know, and I agree with you. Again, with the look, you know, he's kind of, and he even holds a staff, which, you know, something about holding a staff, I think. you know.
Yeah, Disney but, villain staff is kind of a go-to prop.
Yeah, he's tall, he's bony, you know, he's got the extravagant clothing.
Right.
He totally fits the visual. And then, like you said, by the end, and I'm glad you said that the stakes get so high. So many times in these movies, the stakes aren't high.
Right.
And this one, all you've made me do now is want to revisit Aladdin. It's been a few years.
Right.
I may have to rent it in the library or something. But that's a great number one, I have to say. Yeah, I love your choice because for whatever reason, even though I completely agree with you on everything you said, it didn't pop into mind. Again, I love Aladdin. It's one I haven't seen in a few years. So if anything, you maybe want to revisit Aladdin just to see Jafar in action. And I kind of love these top fives already, the off-the-cuff top fives, because it's kind of pushed me into, you know, rethinking and revisiting, you know, some of the
stuff
we're talking about.
When you have a chance to research, or you have a chance to just, you know, shoot from the hip, you know, that's two different ways of thinking about it, and that's why.
True, very true. So I think this is very successful. First going of the Off the Cuff Top Fives, and I'm eagerly anticipating the next one, Kev.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's recap your top five. Start from five and go up.
I think number five was the Queen of Hearts.
Correct.
From Alice in Wonderland.
Yep.
My number four was, I believe it was Ursula, the Sea Witch from Little Mermaid. Number three would be Lady Tremaine from Cinderella. Number two for me was Scar from The Lion King. And number one for me was Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty.
Well, my top five were the Evil Queen from Snow White, Ursula from The Little Mermaid, mm-hmm. Scar from The Lion King, Syndrome from The Incredibles, and Jafar from Aladdin.
Very good.
Well, that about wraps up episode 2. Thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Next time I'll be picking the top 5 subjects, so we'll see how that turns out. Coming up next on episode 3, JJ and I will be talking about Marvel's new space epic, Guardians of the Galaxy. So I hope you guys enjoy that, and we'll all talk to you soon. All right, take care.